From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with a local and statewide news update. Juneau public health officials reported Friday that another four people linked to bar activity had tested positive for COVID-19. So far, at least 15 people have gotten sick after a single large social gathering that many bartenders in town attended in late August. City officials set up a pop-up COVID-19 testing center at Centennial Hall that will be open through the weekend. They urged anyone who has been to any bar in the last 2 weeks, that's between August 29th and today, get tested, even if they don't have symptoms. Deputy City Manager Mila Cosgrove said that by Friday afternoon, 147 people had tested at the center. The four new cases were part of 12 total among residents of Juneau that the city officials identified on Friday. Cosgrove said the city expects to start seeing results from its broader testing efforts beginning on Saturday. She said they're watching the numbers closely, but emphasized that Juneau residents are responsible for their own safety. The first tenants began moving into the new wing of Juneau's Housing First facility this week. Housing First is a concept that provides permanent housing and access to services to vulnerable people. Juneau's Housing First facility in Lemon Creek is called Forget Me Not Manor. The new wing doubles its size. Once everyone's moved in, the building will house more than 60 chronically homeless residents. Maria Levischuk is the project coordinator. She also runs the Glory Hall, Juneau's downtown homeless shelter.
This time, it's a little bit more complicated by COVID.
Moving into the Housing First facility requires federal vouchers, and the pandemic made it hard for some people to get them. But Levischuk says everyone should be settled in before winter arrives. In the first 6 months after the Forget Me Not Manor opened, a study by the University of Alaska researchers found that tenants saw a significant drop in emergency room visits and interactions with police. Levischuk hopes the new wing will reduce pressure on the Glory Hall and the city's emergency shelter. The Glory Hall had to reduce the number of people allowed inside the building during the pandemic.
I don't think it's going to help at all with our issue of having only put 23 people inside, or for, you know, our building being completely inadequate for COVID.
Levischuk says the people moving into the Housing First facility, many of them medically vulnerable, will be safer not living in group settings. Volunteers from a local quilting group made quilts for every new resident, and Northern Light United Church donated gift baskets with basics like shower curtains, dish soap, and towels. The Southeast Alaska community of Angoon has extended its emergency travel order until further notice in an effort to stop the spread of COVID-19 in the small, remote community. Angoon's mayor originally issued the order 2 weeks ago following the first confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the community and believes it's important to keep it in place. KCAW's Aaron McKinstry has more.
Angoon's travel order requires visitors or residents arriving in Angoon to fill out a travel declaration form and to practice, quote, extreme social distancing measures for 2 weeks. That includes staying 12 feet away from anyone outside of their household, wearing a mask at all times outside of their home or lodging, and avoiding businesses and public places. The order excludes those traveling for critical personal needs or for critical infrastructure. The Admiralty Island village of around 450 people has reported 11 total cases, four of which are active, according to a nurse practitioner at Angoon Search Clinic, Sarah Lang. At a recent emergency city council meeting, she said all of the cases are part of the same cluster.
Hopefully everybody understands what a cluster is. They're all related to one another in some way.
Some members of the Angoon City Council opposed extending the order, citing concerns for residents who have to travel frequently for work or health care, or for employees that don't have leave and may lose their jobs if they have to stay home. The council discussed possibly using CARES Act funds to help. Mayor Joshua Bowen said he understood the economic pressure, but also urged everyone to remember the health and safety concerns.
We got to think more of what can we do to help prevent this COVID-19 from affecting more people in our community than it already has.
How to manage outbreaks of the coronavirus in small remote communities like Engun was discussed at the weekly meeting between reporters and top Department of Health and Social Services officials. Epidemiologist Louisa Castrodale said that smaller communities may have fewer cases than cities because of smaller populations, but that doesn't mean there aren't challenges.
Because there's sort of smaller units, sort of smaller family units and opportunities for interact, it could be really difficult to keep things, sort of to preserve somebody's confidentiality and to not generate a lot of real concern with one individual.
Alaska's chief medical officer, Dr. Ann Zink, said another challenge is that national guidelines don't always translate to small communities. Instead, they often have to come up with their own models for managing the coronavirus.
You're being asked more and more on a national basis to be sharing what many of our small and rural communities have been doing to protect themselves, because they've just been doing amazing work.
She pointed to examples like rigorous airport testing and culturally relevant guidelines that take things like lack of running water and overcrowded households into account.
You know, isolation and quarantine are hard enough to understand when we're like talking and reading CDC guidance all the time, but it means something totally different when you live in a family of 14 people in a house. And so I think making sure that you're finding really culturally meaningful, relevant ways to translate both the guidance as well as the recommendations.
Engun's order is in effect until public health officials mark all of the town's cases as recovered. Public health officials are asking community members to continue testing at least every other week. Free asymptomatic testing is available through the town's clinic 3 days a week. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
A muskox was recently spotted in the Bristol Bay village of Manukatik. This is highly unusual. These animals normally range further west across the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. But as KDLG's Tyler Thompson reports, in recent years, state biologists and Bristol Bay residents have noticed these stocky, furry fellas stepping out of their home turf.
Melvin Andrew was out in Manukatik in the early morning. He and his wife, Sally, were looking for moose when they spotted a rather large creature.
She said, a moose, and I was surprised because it was in an area that most people go to. But when I spyglassed it, then I saw the telltale signs of muskox horns. I said some explicit words. What is he doing here?
The Andrews approached the ox, thinking it would leave, but it did not budge. It dipped out of sight, but they managed to catch a glimpse of the animal walking away and snapped a photo. That's the sound of a muskox, recorded by ADF&G. They are native to the Yukon Delta Wildlife Refuge. They can grow to be 5 foot tall and weigh somewhere between 600 and 800 pounds. They have long hair, a slight shoulder hump, and very short tail. Both males and females have horns, but the bulls are larger and heavier. Pat Jones is a wildlife biologist for Fish and Game in Bethel. He says this particular animal is an adult bull that moseyed down from the Nelson Island population.
The bulls seem to have a lot more wanderlust, and they go on longer walkabouts, and they show up in areas first, and then maybe 5 years to 10 years later, we start seeing cows in the areas that we saw bulls. It's just kind of the historical pattern of them moving across the landscape, but there's been some moving your direction now for years.
About a year ago, muskox were spotted by residents in villages around the Togiak Wildlife Refuge. John Diasuk is the village refuge liaison.
First sighting that we had was last year spring. It was muskox that village member had sent it. That was in Chakmang Bay. And the other one was sighted not so long afterward, the one near the village of Platinum.
Muskox disappeared from Alaska in the 1920s. A federal initiative reintroduced the animals a decade later, bringing over 34 muskox from East Greenland to Nunavak Island off the west coast of the state. By the 1970s, the state transported some of the animals from Nunavak to establish new herds on the Seward Peninsula, Cape Thompson, and Nelson Islands, and the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. ADF&G reported a total of about 5,300 muskox in Alaska in 2011. There are no official population counts of muskox in Bristol Bay due to their low presence in the region. But what happens if you encounter a muskox? Unlike moose or caribou, they will not acknowledge a person's presence. Rather, the ox will get defensive and back itself into a corner until it feels safe to leave. But Jones says they will go on the offensive with canines.
Probably a self-defense mechanism from wolves that goes back to the Ice Age, but they they will kill dogs if they get the chance. So if there's a muskox around and you have a dog on a chain, you probably want to bring it inside for the day or two until the muskox passes, because every year muskox kill dogs that are chained up outside.
Muskox hunting is restricted to certain units. It's not permitted in Bristol Bay, and there is a closed moratorium in other regions of the mainland. The period to register for muskox hunting is July 1st through next year. In Dillingham, I'm Tyler Thompson.